The Los Angeles Dodgers won a pivotal game against the Arizona Diamondbacks, but at a cost. We're going to talk about that and so much more here on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch, your stop for daily MLB recap. I'm Christian Rao. I'm here with Troy Brock today, both writers of Athlon Sports, and we are going to break down everything you need to know for what happened over the weekend on Friday, heading into Saturday. This is our first Saturday episode, and moving forward until the season is over, we are going to bring it to you 6 days a week, because that's what we need. We need more baseball shows. Baseball's not going anywhere on the weekends. And there's just too much stuff to cover if we only give you an episode of Friday and Monday, especially if we're going to jam-pack it all in to a half hour. So I got Troy joining me today. We got some fun stuff to talk about. And Troy, let's go right now because we have a loaded show, like always. And we're going to start off out west. The Los Angeles Dodgers win a pivotal game against the Arizona Diamondbacks, holding on after Arizona tried to make a comeback. They win the game. By the score of, I just have the score up here, but 10-9, is that what we wound up going?
10-9, yep.
4 runs scored by Arizona in the 9th inning, home run by Suarez, but they couldn't make the comeback. The Los Angeles Dodgers get the win. But the biggest story coming out of this is in the 2nd inning, Troy, Clayton Kershaw leaves the game after giving a home run up to Corbin Carroll. Interesting timing when he left. The reason he left was because he was dealing with injury. After the game, there was some reports coming out from David Roberts and Clayton Kershaw said he is dealing with bone spurs in his foot, something in his toe, something that he's been dealing with, according to Dave Roberts, for, I quote, a couple of years. First, let's break that down. What's your thoughts about Clayton Kershaw and then your thoughts about this game in general? Pretty interesting stuff. Could be a big move. It's big news for the Dodgers for the rest of the season.
Yeah, losing Clayton Kershaw is huge. He's already had a shortened season with injury as it was. He's only had 7 starts this season, 30 innings. He was still really working his way back from injury. And this is his 6th injured list stint since 2020, since the beginning of 2020. And David Roberts said that it's probably going to be a 7th injured list stint coming. But this is big for the Dodgers. They don't have much pitching as it is with all of the injuries that they've dealt with. Between them and the Braves, they could open their own baseball clinic, essentially.
Ooh. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So far this season, we've only seen 7 starts out of Kershaw. If you want to count that last one a start, because he only made it 2 innings, not even through the 2nd inning. He's only given 30 innings for the Dodgers. And that's a big thing to think about, because there's a lot of other injuries happening with the Dodgers right now. Tyler Glasnow, Yamamoto, who right now working his way back. He did a rehab start in AAA, so there's some positive news there. But you were banking on having Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs, especially not having him for the remainder of the first part of the year. And then you head into possibility of not having him. I saw something on social media saying this: we could have potentially seen the last pitch of Clayton Kershaw's career last night against the Arizona Diamondbacks. I don't know if I want to go that far with it, Troy, but it's still an interesting thing to think about, because he's getting older, he's dealing with some injuries, and it seems like they're nagging now. Is this a possibility that maybe we did see the last of Clayton Kershaw?
That's actually exactly what I wanted to ask you, was, is it time for Clayton Kershaw to hang it up? I mean, honestly, with all the injuries, and he is getting older, he's won his World Series, he's won his Cy Young. He won an MVP too, correct?
I think so. I think he's got me on the spot here. He's got a lot of awards here. I got the award tabs up here. I can't remember now.
I know Verlander did.
Yeah, if he did, I wouldn't be shocked. But he's a whole bunch of all-stars. He won a Golden Glove. He's won Cy Youngs, 3 Cy Youngs. And, yes, he won the Most Valuable Player in 2014, NL MVP. So, yeah, there he goes. 2014, that's 10 years ago, he won the National League MVP. He's got 3 Cy Youngs as well, 2011, 2013, and 2014. But if he's been dealing with some bone spurs in his foot for multiple years, this is kind of new. It seemed like the the reporters were very shocked when Dave Roberts said, "Yeah, he's been dealing with it for a couple of years." Like, I don't think they were expecting that answer. It makes a lot of sense why they've had some, he's had some up and down starts over the last couple of years. If that's something where it's just been undisclosed, especially if it really causes his velocity to change. Kershaw said that he just couldn't get comfortable on the mound last night. He couldn't push off on that foot, and that obviously changed his speeds. We noticed that his velocity was down just a little bit over the course of the game, but I didn't think it was that crucial until you listen to those post-game interviews to say, no, it was a big deal. It hurt. I couldn't go any farther. Some people think that the reason he got pulled was the Corbin Carroll home run. It was a very interesting time for him to get pulled, but I think Dave Roberts made the right choice knowing, okay, this could get a lot worse. Let's go ahead and try to salvage this what we can. The Dodgers bullpen had to deal with 8 innings, so we're going to probably see a couple moves regardless if Clayton Kershaw goes to the injured list or not today, because they need to, you know, be fresh for the rest of this Diamondback series. It's a pivotal series as Dodgers are just holding on to the NL West. Where do you see the rest of this series going, Troy? And do you think the Dodgers can hold on to the NL West for the rest of September with the pitching staff that they're going to bring out now, even more injured?
It's going to be a tough road for the Dodgers through September. The rest of this series is going to be tough. I think the rest of this series is going to be high scoring like last night was. The Diamondbacks through Zach Gallen, and it was a 10-9 game against Clayton Kershaw and Zach Gallen. Granted, Kershaw only went 2 innings, but you look at that start and pitch matchup, you don't think it's going to be a 10-9 game. But in Chase Field, this season alone, combined runs per game, 10.358 runs per game in Chase Field. Wow. Before last night, it was still 10.227 runs per game.
A lot of scoring in Arizona. I mean, this is a team that we saw in the World Series last year in the Diamondbacks, and they started off a little slow as well, but now they're only 5 games behind the Dodgers for the NL West. That might be a little bit too big of a lead to catch up to. They did have a little bit of a slump over the last week or so. The Dodgers, even with all these injuries that the pitching is holding, are still 8-2 in their last 10. Diamondbacks 7-3 in their last 10. I think this is a huge series, regardless of how you look at it. But I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes the rest of the way. Let's move on here because we got plenty to talk about. And let's kind of go our way a little more east, and we'll stop with the Houston Astros taking on the Kansas City Royals. This was an amazing game. I thought this was probably my favorite game of the night. No, second favorite. And we'll talk about that in just a minute, why it was my second favorite. But Framber Valdez almost does it again. Almost goes a no-hitter again. He goes multiple innings going through this before he gets pulled. And he doesn't get pulled because he gives it up like he did his last time, going 8 2/3. This time he gets pulled because of the pitch count. He goes 7 innings strong and pulled because he surpasses a pretty deep pitch count. Houston winds up winning the game 3-2 after the Kansas City Royals come back in the top of the ninth inning. And then we get a nice walk-off by good old Jose Altuve. Take me through this game and what you thought about Framber Valdez's amazing start yet again on the mound.
Framber's good, man. He's just, especially this month, he's been outstanding. This is the, like you said, this is the second time this month that he's almost pitched a no-hitter, 8 2/3 hitless. In the first start of August and in his last start of August, he's gone 7 hitless. And like you said, he didn't give up a hit last night. He got pulled because of pitch count. This month, he has a 1.59 ERA. And he's only given up 13 hits through 34 innings this month. He has been otherworldly this month, to say the least.
And he also has a complete game under his belt. He's got multiple 7-plus innings. He's got that old style pitcher, if you feel. I think you have to say that because you don't get that from many other pitchers. He would fit right into early 2000s, 90s baseball before they had more of a push towards relievers. If they bring out this new rule, the 6-pitcher minimum, Framber Valdez will not be affected. Let's go ahead and just say that. But there's just no doubt at all. I want to flip over real fast and talk about the Kansas City Royals because, first of all, Framber deserves his flowers. I really wanted to make sure that we talked about that start because we might have had the lead with that on Saturday morning. We almost had another no-hitter on our hands, and it usually seems to happen on Fridays with this show because then we have to wait till Monday to talk about it, but not anymore because we're having shows on Saturday here. So we almost had a great way to headline this instead of talking about Kershaw's big toe. Regardless, let's go ahead and talk about these Kansas City Royals. With the exception of what happened in that ninth inning, they were pretty dreadful. And actually, you know what? Even in that ninth inning, they were pretty dreadful. They only got two hits in the entire game through nine. They had nine strikeouts. And the reason that I'm like, okay, maybe I should be concerned. Did you look at the lineup they had out there now that we don't have Vinny Pascantino in the lineup? If Salvador Perez went to first base, they had Fermin at center field. They brought up Nick Lofton to go to in replacement for Vinny Pascantino. He immediately moves to the DH spot in his first time back with the club. A lot of issues in my mind about this lineup. When I looked at it, I was very concerned moving forward. They have a pretty decent spot right now in the playoffs. They're 75-61. They're second AL Central. They're holding a wild card spot. But if Salvador Perez needs a day off from catching or needs to go behind the plate, that I think that lineup looks even worse personally, if in my mind. So I have some more thoughts about the Kansas City Royals moving forward in a quick pitch. And I think maybe that could have a potential fix. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but Troy, your thoughts on these Kansas City Royals. Do you think that this team can hold on and be a playoff contending team without Vinny Pascantino, someone who has really held on to this, almost been glue like them behind Bobby Witt Jr. in the lineup?
To be honest, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this season, especially with Vinny Pascantino out of the lineup. Their lineup was really not all that deep to begin with. It was essentially Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, Vinny Pascantino, and the boys. And now with Vinny Pascantino out, it's just Bobby Witt Jr., who is having a fantastic season. And
oh, yeah.
Salvador Perez, who is also having a really good season for a 34-year-old catcher. But if you look at the Royals' record this season, the Royals are 29-14 against the AL Central. Against every other team in baseball after last night's loss, they are 46-47.
A losing record outside of the division. That seems to be the case in the entire division, right?
Yes, I looked at it last night. I don't remember the exact record, but the Cleveland Guardians are the only team out of the Guardians, Twins, and Royals who have a winning record outside of the division.
Interesting.
And wow, that's something. Their record, the Guardians' record in the division is 23-22, I believe.
And they're right. I mean, and they're holding on to the lead right now, but it's not by much. Yeah. So that's very interesting. That's very interesting moving forward. But when I look at this Royals team, I'm with you. I don't know if I want to go as far as say I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, because I think that there are a few long shots, and we're going to talk about that later in the week of who we think is a long shot for the playoffs. But the Royals, I think, have a pretty decent grasp on where they're at, and I love their pitching. I love Kansas City's pitching. I think they've really outdone themselves on that side of the ball, and I think that's what's actually been keeping them in. But the Vinny Pascantino thing is a huge issue for me. It's a huge issue. And I think that it is going to really impact. Hopefully they can pick up some people on the waiver claims the next couple of days. And that's some, and I have someone who in mind that could really, really change that. I want to leave some extra time here, 'cause I want to talk about this next game. And I know you do too, Troy. The Atlanta Braves put in the hurt on the Philadelphia Phillies. And I think that's exactly what you wanted to really talk about. You were really excited about that portion right there. The Braves winning against the Philadelphia Phillies. They ended this one, even the series, winning 7-2. It was another fantastic start from Reynaldo Lopez. He is doing some fantastic things on the mound. On the other hand, Ranger Suarez, making his second start coming back from the injured list, wasn't as hot, wasn't as good on that one. Take me through this game and your thoughts. Obviously, you cover the Philadelphia Phillies over at InsideThePhillies.com for Athlon Sports. So take me through your thoughts. Obviously, lean more on the Philly side, because we got to hear your thoughts and what the rest of this series is going to look like, because we're in for some, college football aside, we are in for some great, great sports this weekend.
Oh, yeah. A lot of great sports this weekend. Last night was not a fun game for the Phillies. Ranger Suarez, like you said, in his second back from the injured list, he did not have it. And really against the Braves this season, he has not had it in any of his three starts against the Braves. He's given up 3 earned runs, 4 earned runs, and 5 earned runs in his three starts against the Braves. And in it was 15 innings, he's given up 12 earned runs against the Braves this season, which is not ideal, especially against a divisional rival who right now is chasing you down for the National League East Division lead. And it's the offense just did not have it last night. We found out yesterday that Bryce Harper is indeed playing through some banged upness. He's got some wrist and elbow soreness, and that's probably the source of his power outage. He hasn't hit a home run since August 9th, and people have been speculating that he has been playing with an injury, and it came out yesterday that that is in fact the case. So I don't know if that's going to mean he'll get a day off or two here or there in September after call-ups, but the Phillies need Bryce Harper to be Bryce Harper, which he did hit 2 doubles last night, both of them over 105 miles an hour off the bat. But he has not hit a home run since August 9th, and that's just I want to say that's the longest streak in his career that he's gone homerless.
Interesting. It might very well be that you said the power's not there, but he's hitting some pretty hard hit balls, as you mentioned. They're just not getting over the fence. He was their best hitter last night, though. And that's even though that he's been injured, he went 3 for 4. And you mentioned he had a pair of doubles. I think the biggest issue, and I mentioned it on our series preview show at Lindsay Thursday afternoon, was Kyle Schwarber. And Kyle Schwarber is still not doing well on the plate. He went 0 for 4 last night, 3 strikeouts. His slugging finally went over his OBP in his last 7 games. So at least there's that going for him. But there's a lot of issues on that side. I want to touch Lopez one more time here. He went 6 innings, 4 hits, gave up 1 run, 6 strikeouts, and only 1 walk. He joins the rest of the Braves starting rotation, Troy, allowing 3 runs or fewer in 19 straight games. That is the longest season record streak since the mound was moved to the current distance in 1893. You talk about all the rest of those amazing Braves pitchers, Glavin, Smoltz, Maddox. You talk about all them in the past. They didn't complete what this current Braves pitching staff is doing. Oh, and then might I add, they're also not doing it without Spencer Strider. This Braves team is been put together by super glue, duct tape, whatever you call it, and they are figuring out ways to stay in the race. And it might be too late for the NL East lead. We'll see. Who knows? September's going to be a really interesting month, especially if the Braves can wind up winning this series, not even just being a series split. The next 2 games are going to be really crucial. But how amazing is that stat with this pitching rotation? I would have never expected that to be a stat that wasn't done by those legends I just referred to.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. Freed, and that's also Freed's been there, but he hasn't been really the Max Freed that we've known for years.
Right.
He's been a different Max Freed this year. No Strider. It's been Schwellenbach, Freed, Sale, Lopez, and Morton. You won't see those names on a cereal box anytime soon. Most of them, anyway.
Well, hopefully we get some Schwelly O's or something soon, because I'm huge on Spencer Schwellenbach, and I'm really excited to see what he does on Sunday with his start on national TV on Sunday Night Baseball, because I really do think that he's going to be one of the next guys that we talk about all the time, like ace in the making. I really love what we see from Spencer Schwellenbach. Last thing on the Braves here, Orlando Arcia, Troy. How amazing has it been? Not for you. But how insane has it been to see Orlando Arcia just tear it up against the Philadelphia Phillies? I know you have some stats about Orlando Arcia and how he has fanned against the Phillies over the last just the season in general. But in his entire career, he really loves playing these Philadelphia Phillies.
He is a completely different hitter when it comes to facing the Phillies. He hit 2 home runs last night. They were both solo shots, but it's just a completely different guy when he's facing the Phillies. He's hitting, I didn't have it pulled up. That is the one thing I forgot to put in my notes for today, but he's hitting close to 400 this season against the Phillies in 45 plate appearances. That is far and away his best line against any team that they face this season. His next best line comes against the Brewers in only 25 plate appearances.
Do you think it has anything to do with the bad blood, like the Harper Arcia talk? Do you think it has anything to do there? Do you think he just plays at a different level, or you think it's just the extra park or the rivalry? Where do you think it comes from?
I think that it is 100% has to do with the bad blood. I think that as much as I have seen Orlando Arcia play over the past couple of years, that is definitely something that seems like he would play into. And even last series in Atlanta, they kept showing Harper and Arcia on first in that very first series when Arcia got a single, and they kept putting them on the screen together. They were not talking to each other. And normally, anytime you look at first base and the guys on first base, the first baseman and the runner on first base are always chatting it up. They were not talking to each other. When Arcia hit a home run in that series, he stared Harper down as he rounded the bases. And I 100% think that it has everything to do with the bad blood.
There's some bad blood between these two teams. I mean, even the smallest things happening last night when Whit Merrifield went to first base and Bryce Harper flew the Braves hat off his head. I mean, there's some bad blood between these two teams, but I love it. That's exactly – I think that baseball rivalries need to be renewed a little more. We don't really talk about Yankees-Red Sox no more. We don't really talk about Cardinals-Cubs or really Braves-Phillies, Dodgers-Padres. We don't really talk about that in that aspect that we used to, where – we talk about, oh, this is a must-watch game because there might be players charging the mound. You know, we don't really get that anymore. And I'm not advocating for players charging the mound, but I'm advocating for a little bit more fierce rivalness, if you will, in these things. I miss that. That's absolutely something that I remember as a kid, for sure. All right, let's get in the quick pitch because we're already running on time. Look at that. On a Saturday, we're finding ways to load a show. No surprise. This is exactly why we're going to give you a show on Saturday mornings moving forward for the rest of the season. Rhett Lauder gets his MLB debut start against the Milwaukee Brewers. However, it doesn't end very well for the Cincinnati Reds. In that game, they lose. Now, hold it. Let me check this notes. 14-0, Troy, in that game. But it wasn't because of Rhett Lauder. He had a fantastic start in his MLB debut. And the numbers might not show it, but if you watch the game, or at least watched his start, the first four innings, you can tell that this kid has really got something going on. He had four innings pitched, only allowed two hits, one earned run. He did have four walks. That's why I'm saying the box score might not look good, but he struck out six. Those four walks, two of them came on his very first two batters of the game. But he really settled in after that. He figured it out. He had base traffic almost his entire outing, but he looked like a seasoned pro out there, not a guy making his MLB debut. Once he figured it out that, hey, this is the same baseball game that I've been pitching for my entire life. It's just at a different level. It's the same game. Once he figured that out there, once the jitters got out, you could tell that he's going to be something special. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of Rhett Lauder. What about you?
Yeah, he was fantastic. The two walks, I'd probably chalk that up to just nerves in his MLB debut, the two to start the game. But he was fantastic. Six strikeouts against the Brewers lineup. That's solid in a divisional matchup. That's a solid outing. Solid MLB debut for sure. I don't think he should have got the loss. I know you and I have talked about this. Pitcher wins and losses are kind of
– they're stupid. They're stupid. There's no other way around to say it. That pitcher wins and losses, I just don't think should be a thing anymore. I'm glad that they don't go into play when it comes to talking about Cy Youngs anymore. Thank you, Jacob DeGrom, for fixing that a few years ago. But I think it shouldn't even be a stat to begin with anymore, like period. Should be done. Unless you want to look at it for the sake of longevity of a player, like, and put it in that conversation, okay, maybe. But there's other ways that you do that. I still don't think that's a good stat. I completely agree with that one. The Reds did not look good with that series, though. I will say that most of it was one inning. The Brewers took off and crushed in the ninth inning, the win 14-0 in that game. They lost doubleheader, a doubleheader sweep. Ellie De La Cruz looked good. When I was watching these games and then went back and watched the recaps as well, he made some great defensive plays at shortstop in a week where we just moved another Cruz to center field, O'Neill Cruz for the Pirates. And then there's talks about maybe Ellie De La Cruz should do the same thing. What are your thoughts on these Reds teams here? I feel like there's so much potential, but now we're going into September and they're not going to play meaningful baseball. Now they have a lot of injuries right now. Nick Lodolo, Hunter Green, naming a few. But are they on the right path to getting to where they need to be to get into postseason? It's not like they play in the toughest division in baseball. It might be one of the easiest divisions in baseball. Where do the Reds need to go? And let's go quickly here.
I think they just need to develop their players a little bit faster. They've done great. Honestly, I'm a little surprised that they did not trade Jonathan India at the deadline. I think that might have sped them up a little bit. They probably could have got a couple of prospects that were a little closer to major league ready if they would have traded Jonathan India. But I can see them making the playoffs next year or 2026 at the latest.
Our friend Drew Crabtree over at InsideTheReds.com always says he's going to fight you. The fact that you said that Jonathan India should be traded again, he might actually do it. He might actually do it. Let's stay in the AL.
Hunter Green deserves better.
Let's stay in the AL Central real quick and talk about Emmanuel Clase. He goes ahead and breaks the Guardians franchise record for most saves, 150th save with the Cleveland Guardians franchise, surpassing Cody Allen's mark of 149. Clase, this is a guy that we talked about of being potentially traded at the beginning of the season. Doesn't happen. It looks like that was a good decision on their behalf. I did not have Cleveland in my bingo card, in my little black book, whatever you want to call it. I did not have them even being competitive this year, Troy. Clase in that bullpen is a huge reason why, and he is doing some great things, and I personally want to see him stay a Cleveland Guardian for the rest of his career.
Yeah. Yeah, Clase is fantastic. This is his third consecutive season with 40 or more saves. He led baseball in saves in 2022 and 2023. And I got a little trivia for you. We're going to put you on the spot one more time.
Okay.
He is second. He leads the American League in saves this season. Second in Major League Baseball. Do you know who is in first?
Of course I do. It's Ryan Helsley of the St. Louis Cardinals. Of course. Of course I know who that is.
I figured you know that, but I wanted to try it just in case.
Yes. Oh, good call. Yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do for the rest of the season. This bullpen, I think, is really what's holding on to helping them hold on to this lead. The offense has not been great. The pitching rotation has not been great. Bullpen can't be your best asset moving into the postseason, though, so they have to figure that out. But if they can continue the stride, they're going to be one of those nasty teams in October. So I'm excited to see what happens there. All right. Last thing before we head out here, waiver claims we're going into September, and there's going to be some waiver claims that are going to be announced today before the September call-ups, before the rosters lock. You have to be on the team's organizational roster to be eligible for the postseason before we get to September. I want to go out here and just give each of us give a name. Who do you think of the waiver claims would be a good fit for a certain contending team, and why, Troy?
I think Tyler Matzek could be going back to the Braves. They traded him to the Giants earlier. I think it was the Jorge Soler trade, and yep. I think that he will be going back to the Braves. Alex Anthopoulos is big on bringing guys back that helped the Braves win the 2021 World Series. He brought back Rosario. He brought back Duvall. He's brought back Soler. And I think Matzek is next to come back. He hasn't had a great season, but it's only been 10 innings. He's dealt with injuries. He's got a 9.9 ERA. In 2021, their World Series season, he had a 2.79 ERA. And in the postseason, he has a 1.48 ERA. He'll give the Braves a third left-handed reliever with Aaron Bummer and Dylan Lee. And I think that once he is back from injury, he's rehabbing right now, he'll be a great addition to their bullpen.
Interesting. I like that one. I'm going to go on the bat side, and I'm going to go with Tommy Pham to the Kansas City Royals. We talked about the Royals earlier in the show, and the reason why I said, hey, this lineup does not look good. Well, Tommy Pham, I think if you put him in the outfield, I don't think he platoons with any of those people out in the outfield right now, especially with Hunter Renfro being out on injury. You bring Tommy Pham into that mix, even though he's an aging star, I think you are improved drastically because he's got a great bat. He looked good for the beginning of his trade over to St. Louis. He had a great first half with the Chicago White Sox, and he's one of those guys, guys in the postseason that just really do something. So if you add Tommy Pham to the mix in Kansas City, a guy that is really awesome in the postseason, remember him last year in Arizona. And then, by the way, they also have Will Smith, who has this weird thing with making it to the World Series too. You add both of them, maybe we do see Kansas City in the playoffs. Maybe we see them make a little bit of a stretch, and it might just because of superstition, Troy.
Yeah. Honestly, I completely forgot about Will Smith. They're probably going to make a liar out of me. So,
all right. What a fun episode this was today. You got a full 30 minutes on a Saturday. I hope you guys enjoyed this. We're going to be back on Monday with fresh episodes. We're going to bring Troy back for a happy hour on Monday as well. We're going to talk about some playoff long shots. But before we go, I want to bring up one more fun stat here for you to pay attention to for the rest of the weekend. The Cardinals are taking on the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. They lost the opening game on Friday. And Troy, if they get swept, they will continue a really wild streak. Currently, the Cardinals are the only MLB team that has not recorded a win at the new Yankee Stadium 2009 to present their last win in the Bronx, Game 5 of the World Series in 1964. Hall of Famer Bob Gibson was the pitcher in that game. He pitched 10 complete innings. So I'll take you back that far. That's the last time the Cardinals have won on the road against the New York Yankees. So keep that in mind. If they sweep, then that streak lives on. This has been First Pitch. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We'll be back here Monday with another loaded episode to get you ready for the week. We'll be in September. We're going to have some important baseball to talk about as we get closer and closer to the postseason. You can find Troy on Twitter at Troy B Baseball, and of course all his work on InsideThePhillies.com. You can find me on Twitter at Christian S. Rauh, R-A-U-H. And until then, we'll be back here with another episode of First Pitch.